Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harris. I'm really excited to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Friday. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Josh Vernier. Vern, how you doing today, my man?
Well, you said it all. Beautiful day. How could you be hanging your head at a time like this?
No, 100%, man. So take us through this, because I don't think I've ever asked you this before. What is your game day ritual? What is your strategy when the Royals are on the road? I imagine you have a home schedule that you attend to, but it's a little bit different when you plan on watching it on the TV. Take us through, what is a Vern day when the Royals are on the road?
It's basically the same. Again, I'm, you know, without having any kids or any real responsibilities outside of Royals baseball, it's just consuming baseball media. It's kicking it and preparing for the pregame show and just trying to know as much as I possibly can to be ready for whatever barbs are about to be thrown my way on the postgame show.
I can't remember if I asked you this question last week, so if I did, I apologize. But last week, the Cardinals were in town, and some people consider that to be a rivalry. I don't really know if it's a rivalry or not. Now they're playing the Minnesota Twins. I don't know. Maybe I'm weird in thinking this. I kind of think the Twins are their rival, or they just simply don't have one. I feel like Twins fans come down to Kansas City, and it's usually a good crowd for those series. Do you feel that way? Do you feel like the Twins could be the Royals' rival? Or maybe the answer is they just don't have one.
Yeah, I would lean more towards they don't have one. And there really doesn't seem to be any point that I can go back to and say that's where the rivalry was born. Certainly not with Minnesota. You could with the White Sox. Detroit, you could if you tried. You could go back to postseason matchups in the past. We could talk Yankees, of course the Cardinals, but a real rivalry, the hatred is reciprocated, and I don't think that exists in St. Louis. Maybe that's beginning to form. If the Royals can continue to be a perennial power, maybe that rivalry with the Cardinals, I think that is the best opportunity to truly create something, because Chicago already has theirs with Chicago, and the Twins and Brewers, they've been trying to force that up there for a decade. So I'm hoping it's the Cardinals, but yeah, right now I would lean towards you don't really have one.
It's crazy when you look at this division, because the Royals are 28-23. You know, if the Royals were in, let's say they were in the American League West, I mean, they'd be leading the American League West. To now be sitting at fourth in their division, the Twins have been as hot as anybody over the last 2 weeks or so, and the Tigers might be the best team in the whole American League.
Yeah, and that's why it's not funny to me. It is correct when I hear everyone talk about what a big series this is this weekend. And of course, yeah, every series you would think with Minnesota, Detroit, and Cleveland, they're going to be big. We thought that coming into the season, and here we are coming up on the 1/3 point of the campaign. And yeah, that's still true. And when you're in a rock fight of a division, every series is big, right? I mean, the White Sox, when they come to town, are we going to say, okay, well, that's not that? No, you need to handle your business. If the goal is win the division title, every single game is big. If the goal is just to get into the postseason, which, you know, deep down, you know, that's, you know, you give the Royals executives some truth serum and just get us there, right? Just get into October and we'll see what happens. But inside the clubhouse and what they're going to say to the public, the focus is win the division. So every game is big, and Noah Cameron, Michael Wacha, and Chris Bubich, that's your best 1-2-3 right now, and that's what you have going up against a pretty good starter tonight and Pablo Lopez, and a really strong one in the finale on Sunday with Bailey Ober.
What's turned things around for the Twins? Is it just simply the ebb and flow of baseball? Because, I mean, for them to be as hot as they are, I mean, they've won 8 of their last 10 games. They've been red hot. What's turned around for Minnesota?
Well, the pitching has been outstanding. Pablo Lopez is one of the best righties in the American League, or at least has been one of the best righties in the sport for the past 4 or 5 seasons. Last year took a slight dip, but those numbers are right back to where you would expect them to be. The bullpen has a lot of quality arms, a lot of arms that disappointed last year, but have picked it up here in the month of May. The return of Royce Lewis, the electric factory third baseman, the injured third baseman. He's back. Now, while I say that, Carlos Correa and Byron Buxton are not, as they banged heads with one another last week. So they're out of the lineup. I haven't seen the lineup today yet for the Twins. But, you know, they're getting contributions from guys you wouldn't expect. Harrison Bader's, I guess they paid him to make an impact. But him and, you know, Trevor Larnach, Roger Clemens' kids been coming through with some big knocks at the dish. So, yeah, they, like Detroit, like Cleveland, like Kansas City, all four of those franchises entered 2025 believing that they were the best in the division. Their fans still believe, and all four of those cities were the best in the American League Central, and all four teams have flaws, all four teams have strengths, and who can be the most consistent over the remaining 111 games that remain? That to me, it's going to come down to the pitching. And you have to feel good about that. If you're a Royals fan, for the past four seasons, the team with the lowest ERA has walked away with the division title. Right now, the Royals sit atop the American League Central when it comes to ERA, and if that continues, I wouldn't be surprised to see them atop the division when it's all said and done.
Vern, who was that former player's kid that really made you feel like you were old? Because you just mentioned Roger Clemens' kid is a player that you're talking about. Who was that player for you?
Wow, there's a lot of them, but the latest is Prince Fielder's kid is now in the Brewers system, and
Hold on. You're telling me that we saw Cecil Fielder, then we saw his son Prince, and now like we're seeing Cecil's grandkids now in baseball?
Yes. I called him Cecil growing up. But he was like my favorite player, right? Growing up a Detroit Tigers fan, bombing 50 and driving in 100. I loved Cecil Fielder. And then when I got to Milwaukee, it was Prince Fielder's rookie season, and he hit 50 home runs. And he was the youngest player to do it since Willie Mays. And I watched his entire time in Milwaukee. I had a chance to cover Prince and Ryan Braun and CC Sabathia and those great teams. And now, and I remember those young kids, I thought they were twins, running around the clubhouse, and now they're both at least one of them is in the Brewers system. I know they're both ball players, and that makes me feel incredibly old.
Yeah, I had absolutely no clue. Like, you're kind of blowing my mind here.
And
a
the
little
fact
bit.
That, like, just I mean, Alex Gordon's been retired. You know what I mean? Like, I remember everything about Alex Gordon, and that dude's been retired for a while now.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, just getting his thoughts on the Royals. We talked about this yesterday. I understand people's frustration with the Royals in a lot of ways, right? I get it. Like, I understand what the Royals are really good at. I understand their weaknesses. I do think that with the off day yesterday, it kind of allowed us the opportunity to just breathe a little bit. The fact that this team is over 500 at the 50-game mark, that usually spells success. We looked up the last two seasons. If you were over 500 at this stage in the season, on average, you win around 89 games, and 17 of the last 24 teams have ended up making the postseason. The Royals have their warts. They have their flaws, no question. But the Royals are still one of those teams that is very much in the mix with six or seven other teams in the American League.
Yeah, on pace to win 89 games. And again, yes, they have warts and flaws and all that. But if it was up to me and I could choose where those warts are going to be, where those flaws are going to be for my favorite team, I'm picking the offense. You know, I don't want to scramble for pitching. I'm not looking to find a closer. You know, hitting always goes up and down. Every single team in this division has gone through offensive skids. Now, of course, they haven't lasted the first 51 games of the season, save a handful of offensive outbursts. But to me, a struggling offense is maybe not, I don't know if I want to say it's the easiest thing. No, it is. To me, it's the easiest thing to fix, because even a bullpen, you can bring in a lot of arms from the outside, but you know, that takes a while for everyone to find their role, to understand when I start getting ready and what's expected of me and who I'm going to face and how they're used. I think flipping an offense from, you know, game 51 to game 151, that to me is the easiest improvement to pull off if you're a front office. And we're already seeing that. And it, listen, there was never a concern, you know, as it comes to Hunter Renfroe being DFA'd today or Chris Stratton DFA'd a week ago. There has been nothing from this ownership group or this front office that leads me to believe that they're just going to sit idly by, sit on their hands. What have they done to lead you to believe that they're going to do that? So when it comes to this offense, it'll be addressed. I think it's in the process of being addressed in the short term. Long term, you have 2 months until the trade deadline, and I think those things, too, will be accomplished.
Vern, how much credit do we give the front office for the decision today to move on from Hunter Renfroe? Because on one hand, it seems like a very obvious decision, but this organization was willing to essentially eat $7.5 million to get him off of the roster. So there is a measure of credit that is deserved. How much credit should we give them?
Yeah, you can give ownership credit if you want. You know, he's got a ton of money, and now he's going to give more of it to Hunter Renfroe. You can give them credit if you want. You know, the ask, I guess J.J. Piccolo had to go to John Sherman, I'm sure, and hey, can I get the green light to give this dude a bunch of money to get out of here? Yeah, I guess that takes stones when you're the one that gave him all that money. No, man, this is a big league baseball team that has aspirations of winning the division. Carry yourself like one. Put a team on the field that is better tomorrow than it is today. And by DFAing Hunter Renfroe, you open yourself up, both in the 40-man roster and in the 26-man roster, you open yourself up to grab someone on waivers that can offer you something. Renfroe, even with his arm, now that was his one last strength, and he was seemingly afraid to use it. I believe that J.J. Piccolo in this front office can find someone out there that can bring something to this team in that 13th spot, right? The 13th position player. They can find someone via waivers or in the AAA farm system of some other team. Going to give Nick Lofton an opportunity, and I'm all for it. Let's see what this... let's see if he's just a light-hitting third baseman, you know? Third time through at the big league level, let's see what Nick Lofton can do and how many opportunities he's going to receive. But give him credit if you want, but to me, in a uncapped sport like this, for a team that has the stated goals that this organization does, no, this was the proper move.
You mentioned his handful of times up here. I mean, it has not gone great for Nick Lofton while he's here. Do you feel like this is potentially his last chance? I mean, he was up here in 2024.
Right.
And again, I mean, he hit 184, just didn't really give you a whole lot of anything the last time he was here. It kind of feels like he possibly is out of chances after this.
Yeah, no question about it. He's going to turn 27 at the end of this season. Yeah, it's time to find out, are you a 4A player or are you a big league player? And we'll adjust accordingly, right? Adjust the 40-man roster, adjust our long-term plans. Are you a utility guy that we can bank on off the bench? Are you a guy that can allow Drew Waters to get an occasional day off against a tough lefty? I know he has tremendous bat-to-ball skills. He's drawn a bunch of walks down in AAA. Good for him. Do it in the big leagues.
Another player I want to ask you about is John Rave. I was reading a little bit earlier today. Is there a chance that he's coming up sometime in the next 10 days? It sounds like he might take Michael Massey's spot.
I guess Michael Massey's an outfielder now too. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. He's a left-handed bat. He's an outstanding defender. He's not a Michael Massey, Jonathan India, infielder moonlighting in the outfield. John Rave's a guy that I believe can play center field in the big league. So, you know, there was a time that you were wondering, is John Rave coming for Kyle Isbell's job? But Izzy's been on a tear over the past month plus. He's not going anywhere. And, of course, Isbell, one of the five best defensive center fielders in the American League. Yeah, and now with the DFA of Chris Stratton and Hunter Renfroe and moves to the 60-man roster, there are open spots on this 40-man roster which would be necessary to add someone off of waivers or to call John Rave up to the big leagues or to eventually call Jack Caglione up to the big leagues. There needs to be a spot open on the 40-man, and there now is.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, for a few more minutes here, just kind of taking a little bit of a look at the Royals before they begin their series against the Minnesota Twins. Do you just kind of see the Hunter Renfroe contract? Is that just a part of baseball? You took a chance on an outfielder. It was always a 50-50 shot anyway. You got the wrong side of the 50-50. You then moved on accordingly.
Yeah, the track record spoke for itself as far as what you were hoping from him. All you were looking for was some extra base power and some quality leadership. Well, leadership, you know, be a good guy inside the clubhouse. You know, keep the boys going. And Renfroe certainly did that. He's boys will be boys. He's a let's have a good time. Let's rock the mustache. He makes sure that the clubhouse enjoys being a bunch of big leaguers, and you need people like that. So you know that aspect of it, mission accomplished. But yeah, just no extra base power whatsoever this season. Yet to hit a home run, right? What, four doubles? Just nothing. And last year, he had a few nice stretches that kept being interrupted by injury. You know, this likely the end for Hunter Renfroe, you would assume. But shoot, man, I was saying the same thing about Carlos Santana when they got rid of him a few years ago. You thought Jorge Soler was done when they got rid of him a few years ago. And both are still at it. Both are still playing well. I'll be surprised if Hunter Renfroe has the same fate.
If you could maybe go back in time, I wonder if Dayton would have done this, because I feel like one of the criticisms for Dayton is that he would hold on to a player for too long, where fans would be saying, it's time to move on, it's time to move on. But Dayton was stubborn.
It's also a different owner, right?
That's a very fair point. I'm wondering if you think Dayton would have done today what JJ and Sherman had done.
With John Sherman's blessing, yeah, I do. Yeah, for a guy like Hunter Renfroe, yes, I do. Not drafted and developed, not a part of any long-term plan, right? He wasn't signed young. He wasn't a part of the vision of the future. Yeah. With the blessing of ownership and it not being thrown back in your face of, all right, I'm eating this money, you got to offset it sometime down the line. Yes, I think Dayton Moore would have done this as well.
A couple more questions here for our guy, Josh Vernier. Just wanted to get his thoughts on everything. Vern, you and I are around the same age. We were talking about this earlier. I think everybody around our age loves PTI and Around the Horn. Today is actually the last episode of Around the Horn. I just want to give you the floor to talk about how great these two shows were when you and I were coming up.
Well, Around the Horn, to me, is you know, terrific. But just it's the birth. It was birthed by PTI. PTI is everything. I mean, it's in the lexicon, right? I don't know. I know I say it often when Hunter Renfroe's in the lineup and I'm given the lineups to start the pregame show. I would often say, and in right field, your boy, Hunter Renfroe, your boy, right? That comes from Tony and Mike. I know friends would say it to one another, but to me, it's a blatant ripoff of Tony and Mike. Yeah, to me, that's right there with Inside the NBA of, the NFL on Fox is a kid that grew up without cable. That the early stages of NFL on Fox, that was always big. But yeah, these are the pillars of sports. And I mean, everyone's been ripping off PTI ever since, on the radio, on television, networks, and the way that they, promote what's coming up. Everything, not everything, almost everything dates back to PTI, which seems like it's been on forever, but it most certainly hasn't, because I'm getting old.
It's kind of crazy to think about it in this context, how you and I have just seen sports media change in such a way that, you know, there was a time where there was only one place for you and I to get music videos or one place for you and I to get highlights.
If
you
wanted to watch SportsCenter, the same one over and over and over again, I'd watch the same thing three times in a row.
And like you wore that with the badge of honor, like, oh, I know what's about to come up, and would just sit there and be just, oh my goodness, this is the best thing ever. I also think it's hard for some people to kind of remember that, man, having two people talk about sports was really, really hard to find. And to just hope on PTI that they would talk about your team or your story or interview and ask a question about your team, that was not a thing in 2002.
And didn't it seem like they would say things, Tony and Mike would say things, we were like, whoa, man. Now it's so mild compared to what you get on most, well, just most sports shows, period. I'm not talking about hot takes, but just really strong and funny takedowns of a player, of a coach, of an organization. They used to, fire some missiles at people, and now those missiles are anything but strong compared to what we have in the landscape today. It's a lot has certainly changed, some of it for the better, some of it for the worse, but it speaks to how great those two are, that they're just them bringing up your team even to this day still gets the people going.
Last thing, Vernon, we appreciate your time. I'm sure you heard it by now. J.J. Piccolo said that he thinks the Cags could be a left-handed Pete Alonso. Do you think that's a fair comparison? I mean, you've seen Cags play. Is that a realistic player comparison in your mind?
Yeah. Yes, of course. If J.J. says it, first of all, I thought it was really cool that he even gave a name. I don't know if many general managers do that with a top 10 prospect in the sport and the biggest prospect he's had as a general manager. I thought that was cool. Yeah, if he's putting it out there, a guy that's a perennial home run champion, a perennial MVP, a cleanup hitter for a perennial division title contender. That's everything you want with a top 10 pick and everything the Royals more often than not have not received with those top 10 picks. So, yeah, it's a great time. It's unprecedented, C-Dot, if you think about it, to have a team that has true, real, legitimate aspirations to win a division title and also one of the 10 finest prospects in the sport. That's never happened in the history of this franchise. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Absolutely. The point that I made yesterday is, I mean, this is one of the most exciting times to cheer for something. It is the hope of what something can be. If you get the number one overall high school player in the country, you think, man, this is the one prospect that can change our fate and we could win the national championship. If you're the Royals and you know that you don't have a chance to get this kind of player in free agency, and you're talking about pairing Bobby Witt Jr. with a left-handed Pete Alonso, that's how you get back to the heights of 14 and 15, having two legitimate superstars at the heart of your lineup.
For 6 years, too, right? Cags comes up. You have him for 6 years, paired up alongside Bobby Witt Jr., who we don't even need to talk about a decision with Bobby until 2030, I believe. Those two at the middle with Cole Reagans and Chris Bubich and some other young arms on the way. This small market team is doing everything you have to do if you're going to win consistently in a small market. It's a great time to be a fan.
That is our guy, Josh Furnier, joining us on the show today. Vern, enjoy your 3-day weekend, man. We'll catch up with you on Tuesday.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Absolutely. That is our guy, Josh Furnier, joining us on the show today. Always happy to catch up with him and get his thoughts on everything Kansas City Royals. Coming up on the other side, we live in a little bit of a bizarro world. I'll explain more what I mean. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Really happy to be here. Coming up in about 15 minutes or so, we've been actually planning on doing this for like 3 days, and I don't know, we just haven't done it. But James Palmer believes that the Broncos are the biggest threat to the Chiefs in the AFC West. We'll go over that coming up momentarily. Now, a couple of things. I want you guys to really, really think about this, because as I was driving to work today, these two things hit me. How we live in such a bizarro world. Number one, the most popular baseball team in America is not in Major League Baseball. Do you know how crazy of a sentence that would have been 5 years ago? Can you imagine me and you just sitting down having a beer and I tell you, hey, I actually don't think the most popular baseball team in 2025 is going to be a Major League Baseball. What are you talking about? You mean not the Yankees? No. Tomorrow, if the Yankees wanted to play a game at a football stadium, I don't think it would sell out. Tomorrow, if the Yankees and Dodgers agreed to play at a NASCAR track, I don't think it would sell out. It would if it was the Savannah Bananas that we have seen in a very short period of time. A team go from playing in minor league stadiums to now having the ability to take over a NASCAR track, have the ability to go take over a football stadium. They're at Kauffman Stadium this weekend. They're doing back-to-back sold-out games. If you could do back-to-back sold-out games at a 40,000-seat venue, if Arrowhead was able, but it's not because they are renovating it for the World Cup next year, if they were able, they would sell out Arrowhead this weekend. The Yankees and Dodgers would not do that. Shohei could be pitching. Going up against Aaron Judge, they might get 35,000 people out there. The Savannah Bananas roll into town. They're getting 80,000 standard room only. It's like Taylor Swift is on the team. We live in a bizarre world that that's the case. I don't know if I could have predicted that 5 years ago. Can you imagine if I had told you in 2020, hey, you know what? I don't think LeBron's going to be the most popular American basketball player. You'd be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Pretty polarizing. Then I would tell you, I don't think it's going to be Steph Curry either. Well, everybody likes Steph. I mean, his wife has a restaurant in Vegas. She sells cookbooks and pots and pans. Loving family, never had a scandal. No, people are still going to like Steph Curry. He's just not going to be the most popular American basketball player. Oh, well, it's going to be somebody new. Yeah, kind of. Oh, what about Ja Morant? No, it's not going to be him. He's going to get into like multiple gun issues. Oh, it's going to be Zion Williamson. Like, I still remember the first time I ever saw Zion play basketball. He was a sophomore in high school. And I remember thinking, that's the most athletic person I've ever seen in my entire life. I remember thinking that God had created a more athletic version of Charles Barkley. And how did this happen? I was for sure we were watching one of the greatest players we had ever seen. And then it has gone completely left. No, not that person either. Can you imagine if in 2020, if during COVID time, I told you, hey, in 5 years, the most famous basketball player from America is going to be a girl from Iowa? You would have laughed at me and said I was crazy. That's the world that we live in 2025. The most famous and most popular baseball team in America is not in Major League Baseball. It is the Savannah Bananas. They are going around doing a world tour right now, selling out football stadiums. And the most popular, the most discussed, the most talked about basketball player, the player that moves the needle the most in 2025 is a girl from Iowa. Bizarro world. This is one of the most unique periods and times in sports that I can ever remember. You guys can't find me anything more bizarre than those two things that I just mentioned. The popularity of the Savannah Bananas is like an NFL team at this point. They're more popular than some NFL teams. Jacksonville ain't selling out football stadiums. They are, and around the country, not just like one. No, we're going to go from city to city and do this. And I don't even think it's close between Caitlin Clark and whoever you think is the most popular basketball player right now. She is by far and away the most popular American basketball player right now. I don't know if you could have predicted that 5 years ago. That's why we love sports. It's unpredictable. There's a little something for everybody. Sure, if you want real serious hardcore baseball, it's still available. The same game you've come to know and love. But there is a new version on it, a new twist that people around the world have really, really started to gravitate towards. Who would have guessed that the biggest offspring of Steph Curry would have been a girl from Iowa who is one of the most incredible basketball players that we've ever seen? That's why we watch.
I feel like if me and you were doing the show 5 years ago during COVID times, A, we would have been very happy to have content. We were shallow on content. We were doing lake stories like every week. Neither here nor there. But if you ask me, hey, Rob, in 5 years, which one of these seems more unlikely? I think the rise of Caitlin Clark would have been the more unlikely scenario, because there was a time in American culture where the Globetrotters were a huge deal. It wasn't in you and I's lifetime, but the Globetrotters at one point were a massive entity. They were selling out arenas everywhere, playing a version of basketball. It wasn't, you know, real hardcore NBA, you know, chess pass basketball, but it was popular. So if you told me the Savannah Bananas, which became a thing around COVID time, they became one of the more popular baseball teams, if not the most popular baseball team, I wouldn't have believed you, but I could have seen a scenario where that happens because they're basically the Globetrotters. I get it. Caitlin Clark being the most popular basketball player in the world, the most famous basketball player in the world, is A, great for women's sports, and B, 5 years ago would have blown my mind. 5 years ago, we would have had all the players you talked about, and we would have had guys coming through college in the pipeline that I thought, oh, eventually they will rise up and become the biggest star in the sport. I would have never guessed a four-year player at Iowa would be the most famous basketball player. And by the way, her fame is everywhere. I don't know if you saw this last night on social media, Carrington. She gave a thumbs up to some girl who said, you know, started talking trash to her. She does a benign thing like that, and it explodes on the internet. I think her rise in popularity would have been the more crazy thing to hear about 5 years ago.
Let's talk about this for just a little bit. If we're going to talk about Caitlin Clark, then we have to talk about Angel Reese. I think it's twofold. This would be my advice to Angel Reese. I don't think she would take my advice, but this would be my advice to Angel Reese. Did you see her stats from her last game? She played 27 minutes. She was 0 of 8 from the floor with 12 rebounds. 9 of them were offensive rebounds. That means she was rebounding her own misses. She was rebounding her own misses. Two things. Number one, I think it is obvious that Angel Reese needs to disconnect from all of it. This is a mental thing. I know people have their issues with Angel Reese. She was a first-team All-American just 2 basketball seasons ago at LSU. She's actually really, really good at basketball. I think it is obvious that all of the noise around her, Caitlin seems very built for it. Doesn't really seem to buy into it. Doesn't really seem too interested in wanting to be famous in the same way that Angel Reese does. Hey, I play basketball. Sure, I do my other things, but my number one objective is to be the best basketball player that I can be. My advice to Angel, and I was thinking this over the summer. Remember, you and I had talked about it. Hey, keep the main thing the main thing. You're doing a lot of other stuff this offseason. And cool, your fame and your popularity offers you the ability to do some really cool things. Don't forget the main part, which is you are a basketball player. I also think, second, some people are made to kind of be the villain and play the villain, and some people aren't. I think in some ways we are forgetting this is a 23-year-old person, a young person who is constantly being talked about. Some people love her, some people hate her. Some people are not built to carry that level of conversation and discussion. They ain't built like that. I think we are learning more and more. Angel, you are not built like that, and that's perfectly fine to be. I would suggest just simply turning off the phone for a little bit. This is embarrassing. You can't play much worse than this. 2 points on 0 of 8 shooting? You had 12 rebounds, 9 of them were offensive? And we already know Angel ain't stepping out and shooting no jumpers. You were missing layups and getting your own rebound. This is a time where you just got to woo sign. You just got to get back to business. Get back to your fundamentals. Stop worrying about the Met Gala and podcasts and all these other things and go back to simply playing basketball. Because I'm telling you, you and I are on the internet enough. The internet is mocking you right now relentlessly for how you play. I think Nick called her a couple of days ago a wildly popular rebounder. It's kind of hard to argue with that assessment of how she plays. Coming up on the other side, Rob, we got another college football list to argue about. And boy, I'm excited about this one. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Hey, it's Cole Reagans from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with C-Dot on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right. I am really, really excited to argue with Rob about this, actually. I'm very, very thrilled to argue with you about this. So we had talked about this a couple of days ago, that there was a list on The Athletic where they were going through the 25 best players of the last 25 years in college football. Well, I didn't know that they were doing a series this week. So they have done a bunch of these very similar kind of lists over the last 25 years. So they did the 25 best games of the last 25 years, the 25 best coaches, etc. You guys get the point I'm making. They released their top 25 programs of the last 25 years. Let's argue. Rob, number 10, Florida. Number 9, Texas. Number 8, USC. Number 7, Oregon. Number 6, Clemson. Number 5, LSU. Number 4, Georgia. Number 3, Oklahoma. Number 2, Alabama. And number 1, The Ohio State University. Those are the top 10 programs in college football since 2000. No Missouri on this list, no KU on this list, no K-State on this list, if you were wondering. All right, Rob, let's move on. Clemson should be in the top 5. Clemson at one point was neck and neck with Alabama as the top program in college football. If you can argue at one point that you were at the mountaintop, and I think pretty clearly the best college football program in the country with multiple chips, I think that puts you in the top 5. Why is Oklahoma on this list? Oklahoma has been great, consistent. Don't get me wrong. Oklahoma has been one of the 3 best programs in college football over the last 25 years. Absolutely not. Oklahoma's been better than Georgia. Oklahoma, no. They've won championship in the last 25 years. No, no, no. Clemson should be in the top 5. I think Oregon's a little too high up on this list. Those are the 2 teams that I would, now looking at the list, I'd kick out of the top 10. You can't have no championships over the last 25 years and tell me that you're in the top 10.
I mean, Texas feels like a little bit high in that regard too. Texas has 1 national title, which is the same as Oklahoma in that same window. Like that feels a little bit high, but yeah, Clemson should be 3. Honestly, I would have Clemson at 2. Like, I would have Bama at 1. I wouldn't have Ohio State at 1. I'd have Bama at 1. I'd have Clemson at 2, Georgia 3, Ohio State 4. Ohio State has 3 national titles in that window, but they also got 1 year where they weren't allowed to compete because they were on penalty from the NCAA. Bama's been the best programmer over 25 years. They just have been. I don't have to like it, but Bama has been the best 25-year program. They should be 1 ahead of Ohio State.
All right, this is why I would argue a little bit, and I don't think you're being fair. I do think you have to acknowledge the time before Dabo got there, and that time is also in the 2000s. So we can't.
That counts for Georgia too, because Mark Richt didn't hit the ground running.
I'm with you, but I can't remove the fact that I can't remove the Tommy Bowden years. Those years happened. Ohio State has never had those years. Ohio State is the most consistent program in all of American sports. You can't think of times where Ohio State's been down. They're always good. They're always in the mix. They always got a chance to win the national championship. So I don't have a problem with Ohio State being in the conversation. I'm with you. I would put Alabama number 1 on this list if I was making the list. I probably honestly would put Clemson 2, and then I would put Ohio State number 3 on this list. I don't really have an issue with Georgia being 4. I'd probably swap them with LSU, but I think we're kind of parsing here a little bit. I'm with you. I think Texas is a little too high up on this list. USC is a very interesting case because when USC was hot, they were as hot as anybody. But it feels like USC's been cold now for what, a decade? Like, we're giving a lot of praise to those 4 or 5 years with Pete Carroll and not the 15 years since Reggie Bush left USC. I think that's a really, really interesting argument with them. I think you and I are the same place at Texas. Texas has not been one of the 10 best programs in college football the last 25 years.
Also, and this is going to sound weird coming from me, K-State's not in the top 25? I'm not saying they should be two.
I mean, I can keep
K-State should be top 25. K-State has multiple Big 12 titles.
I don't know if you could put them over some of these other teams.
Give me 20 through 25 because that's where they should fall in. Give me the bottom of the list.
Boise State.
Okay, that's fine.
Boise State has been better than K-State.
Yeah, I'm agreeing.
Oklahoma State.
I would take K-State or Oklahoma State.
Utah.
K-State has more Big 12 titles than Oklahoma State in that timeline.
Okay, I mean, I'm not fighting you on that.
Utah. Yeah, that's fine.
Utah's been better than K-State during this time.
Not fighting you on Utah.
Iowa.
Iowa feels low, but yeah, Iowa's been better than K-State.
Washington. Washington should be ahead of K-State.
What? You talk about there were some thin years at Washington.
There were some thin K-State years, too.
I bet the thinnest K-State was better than the thinnest Washington. Because you're talking about in 2000s, right at the end, right in the height of Snyder 1.0. That times were good in Snyder 1.0.
Washington's 24, and they got Michigan State at 25.
I'd also take K-State over Michigan State.
I'd have to really go back and look at Michigan State's years. I'd have to really, really go back.
I know they made
back.
A playoff, which probably affects the calculus, but Michigan State's never won the Big Ten.
How many great K-State years are we talking about since 2000?
Five really good ones.
I'm talking about great. I know they've had some very good years. Last year was a good year, but not one of these kind of years.
Three great ones. 2003, when they throttled Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game.
The Darren Sproles year.
2012, where they were one win away from playing the national title
game. And then
a
couple years ago when they won the Big 12 and they lost to Alabama in the Sugar Bowl.
The Will Howard, Will Howard, Deuce Vaughn. Those are the three great teams.
Three great years get you in the top 25? Oh, last 25 years on this list?
How many great years has Michigan State
I'm with you. I don't know why Michigan State's on this list. I don't know why they're on this list. I don't know if Michigan State's been that much better than Missouri over the last 25 years.
Yeah, Michigan State.
Where it's been like overwhelming that Michigan State's been better than Missouri.
I would take Missouri over Michigan State, too. Michigan State feels like they just kind of let's pick a team.
Man. Someone asked, where's Michigan? Michigan is actually 11 on this list. Florida State is 12. Notre Dame is 13. Has Texas been better than Notre Dame over the last 25 years?
The Vince Young title does have to carry some weight.
Yeah, but the thing about Notre Dame is they're always around the championship. They might not be in it. They're usually around the championship. Miami was 14, Auburn at 15. That one year for Auburn is doing a whole lot of work over the last 25.
They went back to a national title game. Remember, I'm not even trying to pour salt in the wound. They won an SEC title over a team and then played Florida State in the national title game.
Yeah, no, that was a little nasty work. There was no reason for that. Especially when I haven't thrown any shade at KU. If they did bottom 25 programs since 2000, KU might be on this list, but I didn't throw any shade. I saw it. I saw evil intention in your eye. There was no, you and I bonded during that segment. There was no reason to do that. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.